And our next speaker is Vernice. Vernice was here last year, and she was such a powerful speaker, and I learned a whole lot from her, and was also really motivated to try to go back to where I'm from, Boston, and keep the faith there. So we wanted to have her back again. She's a member of the National Black Women's Health Project. She's a feminist, she's an activist, and has been doing a lot of work over the years on issues of women's oppression and reproductive freedom. I'd like to welcome and introduce to those of you who don't yet know Vernice Miller. Vernice, thanks.
Good evening, afternoon, whatever time of day this is. I wanted to begin.
I'd like to welcome and introduce to those of you who don't yet know Vernice Miller. Vernice, thanks.
Good evening, afternoon, whatever time of day this is. I wanted to begin my presentation with a question which reflects on the overall theme of this workshop, and that is, where would Brother Malcolm stand on the issue of sexual harassment of his sisters? And as we think about that, and I think the issue is pretty clear based on his writings, his ideology, the way he lived his life, that it would definitely not support the way that his sisters are being treated currently in the context of this country and the world over. So in the overall context of this conference, I think we do need to keep the life and the writings and the history of Malcolm paramount, and always juxtapose that to the issues that we're talking about, and then try and see where people come down on the issues. And right now in our community, we're in the wrong place on this question. In my presentation last year, I spoke about the struggle of African American and other women of color to control our bodies and to exercise full reproductive rights. I began by focusing on the struggle of slave women to maintain control of their lives and bodies, frequently resulting in suicide as a means of escape. Today I want to begin my remarks again by reflecting on the particular conditions, especially the sexual reality of female slaves in the United States. Recently there was an article written by Rosemary Bray in the November 17th New York Times magazine entitled Taking Sides Against Ourselves, a thoroughly researched piece reflecting on the historical antecedents of sexual harassment of African American women in the aftermath of the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. Ms. Bray focused heavily on the seminal work by Harriet Jacobs, Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, published in 1867. I read this book for the first time about 20 years ago. It served to ground my views about myself as an African American woman in the Americas. It helped to sear in my mind forever the ever-present sexual violence that defines the lives of slave women and the sexual violence that awaited me because of my race and gender, my inescapable realities. For over 100 years, Harriet Jacobs' book was regarded as fiction until in 1987, Jean Fagan Yellen of Pace University completed 6 years of research substantiating the existence of Harriet Jacobs. That is, that white women and people the world over did not believe that this book was true, and that what was reenacted and recounted in that book had actually ever taken place. So somebody then had to go behind Harriet Jacobs and document the fact that she lived, and she lived through what she wrote about in The Life of a Slave Girl. I hate reading. Since they asked me to prepare this, I actually don't like to read what I write and rather just speak, but I'm going to try and follow the text today. I sincerely doubt that any African American woman who ever read Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl ever doubted one word of this account. We may have taken months or even years to finish reading about the life of Harriet Jacobs because the pain reflected on its pages was too much to ingest all at once, but its truth was infallible to us who inherited her pain and her bondage. Since slavery, African American women have been caught in the bind of liberation of the race versus liberation of the self. The dedication and commitment of African American women to the various movements of our people, be it the Universal, the UNIA, the abolitionist movement, the NAACP, the civil rights movements, and the black nationalist movements of every stripe, is unequaled. However, there was no reciprocal support for and dedication to the liberation of African American women. Our freedom was never a paramount element in the liberation of our race. Oftentimes, our commitment to our race has been used as a weapon to foster our continued oppression as women. The Black Power Movement is a classic example of this. Post-slavery, African-American women have expended a great deal of energy trying to expel the myth of black women as sexually promiscuous, animal-like, wild women. These myths fostered and legitimized the ongoing sexual violence and oppression visited upon African-American women by white and African-American men. What Anita Hill experienced at the hands of the Senate Judiciary Committee and Clarence Thomas was a recasting of the many historical myths believed about us as women. That is, we're psychosexual, evil, manipulating, self-serving, mentally unstable monsters, to name but a few. She was not, after all, who or what she appeared to be, because powerful white men did not experience African American women in a positive context. This myth also extends to African American men on some levels, and served to legitimize the practice of lynching our brothers in the past, and promotes the violence of present-day white supremacists as they carry out their violent acts against black men today. One very large myth continues to pervade the African American community, and that is heterosexism. Men assume that all African American women, whether lesbian or straight, live for their sexual attention. Serious, serious, serious error. African American women who define ourselves as feminists are now viewed as anathema and enemies of the race. And by way of that, I want to give you an example of a radio talk show that I did, the Breakfast Club on WLIB. I think it was 2 days after the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill second round of hearings finished. And the point of discussion was basically, you know, what did you think about the hearings? And, you know, what is your perspective? And, you know, what do you think? And there were two black attorneys, women on the show, one Latina woman attorney, and myself, who was not an attorney. And we basically were saying what we thought. And we talked for about, I'd say 20 minutes. I walked in the room late, about 5 minutes late. They went on the air at 7:30, and I walked in the room about 7:35 or 7:40. And when I walked in the studio, all I could hear was this person excoriating this sister who, if you don't know her, you should know her, Sherilyn Eiffel, who's an attorney with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and a brilliant attorney in the area of reproductive rights. And Sherilyn was being castigated for the fact that she worked at the NAACP, and the NAACP, after all, was a traitor to African American people, and that she was a traitor to African American people for having the views that she had. And any woman that spoke out and thought that women had rights, or that the right of women to control their bodies was paramount over anything else in the black community, was, after all, an enemy of the race. And I kind of like stepped back out the door and I said, okay, reality check. And then I came back and I said, all right, that was one person. Well, we must have taken about 30 calls in the context of that show. We were on the air for about an hour and a half. And out of those 30 calls, maybe two people agreed that perhaps Anita Hill might have actually been sexually harassed. But the majority of the rest of the people said that she was not sexually harassed, that the problem was Anita Hill, that what we were facing, after all, was a classic example of a black woman being used to destroy a black man, and that we, who would come forward and support her position or her perspective, were also enemies of the race. Now, I have been called a lot of things in my day, but never has anybody ever called me an enemy of the race because of my particular view or position. And this was the vehemence that was circulating in our community around this particular issue. The strange thing was that Sherilyn Eiffel had been on the radio exactly 1 month before, on September 12th, which was the primary day in New York City, talking about Clarence Thomas and his qualifications to gain a seat on the Supreme Court. And she was on the air with Tatum, the publisher of the Amsterdam News, and David Patterson, who's the state senator from Harlem. And people called in overwhelmingly and agreed with the perspective, which was that, you know, everything else notwithstanding, this man was not qualified to be a Supreme Court. He just wasn't up to the job. And everybody called in and had that perspective. But once Anita Hill was interjected into the equation, it was a whole different story. And the issue of sexual harassment galvanized the African American community in a way that I have not seen anything sweep through our community in a long time. All of a sudden, all of the fallibilities of Clarence Thomas was swept aside, and the fact was he was being attacked by a black woman, therefore he should be supported, and he should go right onto the Supreme Court, even if when he got there, he would try and dismantle all the rights that we had as a people. That notwithstanding, Anita Hill was the problem. So I kind of tapped into something that I knew was there but didn't know how deeply the current was running through our community. And I was exposed to that on WLIB. And apparently when we got off the radio on the Gary Bird Show, people continued to call in and go off for another 2 hours about what a heinous, evil bitch Anita Hill was. And this went on and on and on. So the myths about who we are and what we are as women are perpetuated, but they're historically perpetuated. What people are saying about Anita Hill is the same thing that was said about African-American women who were slaves, and African-American women just post-slavery in the antebellum South, and then on through history up until the present time, that we are seen in the same historical context as the first day we were brought to the shores of this country from Africa, and nothing has changed in terms of how African-American women are perceived. Based on the current climate, where do we go and what do? First of all, the entire African-American community has got to begin to respond to the issue of sexual harassment. That the majority of people who are sexually harassing African-American women are African-American men. And we need to be clear about that, that yes, there are workplace scenarios where black women and white men are together and there is some expression of sexual harassment, sometimes very violent, but for the most part, the sexual violence that we experience as women in this country is at the hands of our own men. And that is irrefutable. And if people want to make themselves feel more comfortable by saying that it's white men who are attacking our women, then you're not dealing with the reality of what happens in our communities. And the simple geographic reality of this country is that we still live in an incredibly segregated society. There are not a whole lot of white people and a whole lot of black people living side by side. That's just not our reality. That's not to say that we don't live together in some places, but for the most part, our communities are racially monolithic. There are black people, there are Latino people, there are Asian people, and we may live together as people of color, but for the most part, we live in our own communities. In my community in West Harlem, the population of white folk is 2%. So the majority of the sexual attacks that happen in that community are at the hands of black men and Latino men. And we have to deal with that and stop trying to thwart it off as some grand kind of, theoretical conspiratorial concept that all of these violent men are rushing into our community from outside to do harm to our women. It's our own brothers who are doing it. And we have to acknowledge that, and we have to begin to deal with it, because if we don't deal with it, it will continue to perpetuate itself, and the issues will get far worse than they are now. And they're pretty bad right now in terms of the level of sexual violence and sexual oppression that goes on in our community. We have got to begin to teach young African-American men to respect their sisters. It is paramount. Because these people grow up to be brothers who have no respect for their sisters, and brothers who feel it is okay, and in fact, it is accepted, and right now it is accepted, to express themselves in any way that they see fit towards their sisters. And sometimes people think, you know, we've had so much discussion in the aftermath of the Anita Hill stuff around what is sexual harassment. Isn't sexual harassment when a man physically attacks or touches a woman? That's one level of sexual harassment. But sexual harassment is also the inability to be able to leave your home and walk to the subway or the bus stop without someone making sexual comments to you or actually coming and trying to interact with you on the street merely because they are a man and you are a woman. Now, you know, I mean, you experience that all the time in this country, and, you know, for most of us who are women, if you can find 10 women who have never experienced that, you have 10 really rare beings who you need to sit down and talk to, because their experience is wholly outside of the realm of the reality for the rest of us. But the reality is that that's what we deal with on a day-to-day basis. But the incredible reality that I have right now is that young men, you know, I mean, who are obviously 15 years old, who think that they can say anything to me who is 32 years old, who have absolutely no boundaries whatsoever around the fact that, all right, I can say stuff to the teenagers, but, you know, after a certain point, you can't just talk to any woman on the street like that. And there used to be that level of, you know, respect of older women, not that I'm an older woman per se, but that kids would talk to kids, but that kids would not feel comfortable talking to any woman they saw on the street in any fashion in which they so desired. That is no longer the case. They will say anything, they will do anything, and you are at risk as a human being being out there on the street. But we are at risk again at the hands of our own people. And if we don't begin to seriously talk about it, to dialogue, if older African American men do not begin to sit down and have dialogue with younger African American men, they will continue to act out in the violent ways that they do. Not only violent to each other, but violent to women. And that's unacceptable. That is unacceptable in the African American community. And we have allowed this situation to get beyond out of hand. But it's out of hand, but nobody wants to address it. And we surely, you know, we think that we want to invite the police in to do something about it, but the police will stand right there and watch it go down. You know, they'll watch a brother and a sister brawl in the street. They'll watch a brother stab a sister, you know, in a minute, and just stand there and say, you know, well, that's a function of, you know, of black people. That's what they do. They're violent people. You know, and right now we are acting as if that somehow is the undergirding philosophy of our entire community. And we walk by and we see all kinds of things go function of, you know, of black people. That's what they do. They're violent people. You know, and right now we are acting as if that somehow is the undergirding philosophy of our entire community. And we walk by and we see all kinds of things go on in the street and people say, oh, you know, that's a shame, and keep stepping. And just keep stepping and watch people be destroyed and be attacked right there, and don't say anything and don't do anything and don't try to intercede in that situation. And I do remember, even though I'm as young as I am, I do remember 20 years ago living in a wholly different kind of reality in my community. Yes, there was violence. Yes, there was violence of men against men and men against women, but it was nowhere near the proportions that it is now. And if you saw something going on the street, somebody would step in and try and intercede in that situation. People had knives and guns then, just like they do now, but somehow the feeling of closeness and connection one to another overrode the feeling of personal fear. And right now, we just, as you know, as soon exact ourselves from the situation, then get into it. We have got to start talking to these young men. If you hear them on the train talking about women as animals, which is how they talk about us right now, then speak up and say something. If you don't think the perspectives that they show and that they have are appropriate, if they are not in sync with what you think is the right way for men and women to talk to each other, then say something. Step in and say something. I mean, I find myself constantly in the context of a group of young men who are talking about women. Well, you know, this bitch did so-and-so, and this hoe did so-and-so. And I'm going, wait a minute, does girlfriend have a name or what? You know, can you just call her by her name? Does she have to have these adjectives before them? And they look at me like I'm crazy, but they stop. And they think about what they said. Now, of course, when I get off the train, they may go right back to the conversation they were having. But you have got to begin to try and have some dialogue with folk. And that includes the young people in our own families who, you know, may act one way when they're with us. But the popular culture says that they should act another way when they're not within the realm of your hearing. And they do. Trust me, they do. You know, I'm claiming responsibility for the people in my own family. Strangely enough, we don't have any males in my family. We don't have any males born after me in my family, none. You know, so I can't take responsibility for what the young men in my family do, but I can take responsibility for the young women in terms of how they interact with young men. And this is not to say that the men are completely at fault, but this attitude of I can do anything or say anything whenever I want to women at any point in time is a dangerous concept, a concept that explodes in actual acts of violence if given the right fervor and the right ferment. And that is what's happening in our community. And we have got to begin to deal with that. And I'm not putting that responsibility on anybody else, because it's not the responsibility of outside forces outside the community to deal with what is a very serious breach of morality in our own community. And I am not thereby suggesting that people need to act a certain way, but violence is violence and it's unacceptable. Sexual harassment is unacceptable on any level, in any context, whether it be a work situation, whether it be between a brother and a sister, or neighbors or strangers on the street, it is unacceptable. And somehow it has become the code of the day. That is the only way, it seems, that young men and young women interact with each other. And there's something seriously wrong about that. And it was not always like that. You know, it would be one thing if our experience in this country had always been about that, and now we're talking to try and, you know, and overthrow something, some level of historical oppression, but that's not true. This is a modern day reality. This is not something we brought to these shores with us. This is not something that we carried through slavery with us. You know, and if you think back to the days of slavery, even when we were in our most extreme conditions of oppression, African American men and African American women related to each other in a most respectful context, and men would lay down their lives to protect their sisters, and sisters would do the same and often did for their brothers. And that's how we survived that period of our history. And the reason that we're not surviving so well now is because we disrespect each other to the max. We have no respect for each other as human beings, and we can't talk about a liberation struggle if we don't have that very basic level of respect for one another, and uplifting and respect for the lives of one another. That, you know, you can't even talk about let's build a strong united nation if we're out here killing each other and perpetrating violence at every turn. That does not come under the context of a liberation movement. So lastly, that's what I want to talk about, is this movement that people keep talking about. You know, this movement for liberation and this nation building and this wonderful process that's all very rhetorical, but it's not really happening. And one of the reasons that it's not really happening is because of the level of dissonance between the men and the women. And you can't talk about building a nation when 50% of that nation is currently in some level of oppression and degradation. You cannot move half of the nation forward. You got to move everybody together. And until we start respectfully dealing with one another, we're going to continue to be at odds with one another and at war with one another. When the war is not sisters and brothers, the war is those who are trying to wipe us off the face of this planet. And I don't think there's anybody out here who denies that that is happening today in the context of this country and this world. So in order to build this united movement, there's got to be a coming together of the brothers and the sisters. And we cannot come together until folks deal with, acknowledge the fact that the issues of sexual violence and sexual oppression and sexual harassment are unacceptable in an African or African American context, unacceptable. And you cannot come into any forum and talk to me about what you want me to do to help you build this organization or this movement or do this work if you also going to come to me on the sly and say, well, you know, I think that we also should be getting together in another context. You don't need to talk to me about any of that. You need to talk to me about preserving the race. And preserving the race is not about how you can oppress me. So it seems that, for me at least, when I look back at some of the works like the incidents in the life of a slave girl, I know what people survived in this country. I know what women survived. I know what men survived to be here, for us to be here. And we should not abrogate those historical lessons of what it takes to survive in this country. And while we may not have the actual chains and bonds and shackles on, we still obviously are incredibly oppressed as a people. But some of this oppression we're bringing on ourselves. And we've got to let go of this stuff, and we've got to begin to talk about it and not deal with it in a taboo context. It is okay to talk about issues of sexual violence and sexual harassment. If you don't talk about them, you can never begin to deal with them openly and honestly and eradicate them from the context of our community. Thank you.